We began the study of the book of Genesis last Sunday when I did an overview of this book. And this morning I want to expound this first passage in the book of Genesis that describes the first 5 days of creation. The Bible tells us that God created the heavens and the earth in 6 days. And then it gives us the details of those 6 days and what God created in each one. And this morning we're looking at the first 5 days. And then next week we will be looking at man created on the sixth day, the special creation of God. Now, as we study this passage, I want to remind you of the historical context. Why is it that this passage was written? And we know that Moses wrote the book of Genesis. And we know that Moses lived many, many centuries after these events. Moses, as you know, lived in the land of Egypt. That's where he was born, because the people of Israel were there in the land of Egypt. They'd been in the land of Egypt some 430 years. And then the Lord redeemed them, brought them out of slavery in Egypt, and took them across the wilderness to the promised land. And Moses wrote Genesis at some point in order to instruct the people of Israel. And I was making the point last week, and I make this point again, that when the Israelites were in Egypt, they had gone into idolatry. They had gone into the worship of false gods. Let me just read to you a couple of passages which remind us of this. When Joshua was addressing the people of Israel at the end of his life, Joshua says to the people of Israel, he says, remove from you all the idols that you and your fathers worshipped in the land of Egypt. Joshua says to the Israelites, he says, remove from among you the idols that you and your forefathers worshipped in the land of Egypt. So Joshua reminds us that the people of Israel were worshipping idols when they were there. Many centuries later, the prophet Ezekiel wrote his prophecy. And Ezekiel, in the book of Ezekiel, God speaks again to the people of Israel. And God says to the people of Israel, this is in Ezekiel chapter 20. God says, I say to them, cast away the detestable things your eyes feast on, every one of you, and do not defile yourselves with the idols of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. But they rebelled against me, and they were not willing to listen to me. None of them cast away the detestable things their eyes feasted on, nor did they forsake the idols of Egypt, but worshipped them. So you see, we have this teaching in the Bible that when the people of Israel were in Egypt, they had gone into idolatry. And so when God brought them out, in a sense, Genesis was written to introduce the one true living God to the people of Israel. They were steeped in idolatry. And Moses says, I want to introduce you to your God who has redeemed you out of Egypt, out of slavery. Now, this passage, Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 to 25, lessons from creation. I want to say two things from this passage, two things that this passage teaches us and was designed to teach the people of Israel in the days of Moses. And the first lesson from this passage is this: there is one true living God, and we are to worship Him alone. There is one true living God, and we are to worship Him alone. I was reading about the religion of the Egyptians, and they tell me that they had something like 2,000 gods. And the Egyptians worshipped these different gods. there was a god for the sun, or the sun was a god, and the moon was a god, and the sky was god, and the river Nile was god. And so when they wanted rain, they would pray to the sky that the sky would gather the clouds and would pour rain. And so they devoted their prayers and their works towards this one particular god, the god who was the sky. And when they wanted sunshine, they would pray to the one god, the god who was the sun, Ra he was called, and they would pray to him, and they would pray to the moon, and so on. So there were all these thousands of gods, and the Egyptians worshipped them. And here, in this passage, Moses writes in great detail about creation. That's the first thing that strikes you, doesn't it, when you read this passage, how much detail there is here. I mean, Moses could have written in a couple of sentences that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth in 6 days, and in those 6 days, he created everything that you see. He could have just done that in a couple of sentences. But you notice that Moses goes into great detail. He speaks about light. He speaks about the sun. He speaks about the moon. He speaks about the expanse, the sky. He speaks about the sea. He speaks about the land. He speaks about the animals and the birds and the fish and the plants. Everything. He goes into great detail and he says, you look around you and everything was created by God. And so he is saying to the people of Israel that when you fell into idolatry in the land of Egypt, you were mistaken, you were wrong, you were actually abandoning worship of the one true living God, and you were going into idolatry. And so Moses' task is to bring the people of Israel back to the one true living God. And hence all this detail about creation. God created the heavens and the earth. God created the expanse above. God created the sun. God created the moon. God created the seas. God created dry earth. God created every plant. God created every bird, every marine creature, every animal on the earth. God created everything, and Moses says there is one true living God and we are to worship him alone. Now, how does this apply to us today? We're not in Egypt. I don't think many of us have started worshiping the idols of the Egyptians or anything like that. How does this apply to us today? Well, the Reformation theologian John Calvin says that the human heart is a factory of idols. In other words, idolatry is in the heart of man. We are fallen human beings and we create idols. That is something we do instinctively. What is an idol? I mean, an idol isn't just something made of wood or stone or metal that we bow down to. The best definition of an idol is this. An idol is something that you look to give you peace and joy and fulfillment and happiness here on earth. Man's heart has been designed to seek peace and joy and happiness and fulfillment. All human beings seek joy and happiness and fulfillment and contentment here on earth. And an idol is whatever we turn to in order to give us this. So there are people in the world who actually have gods. And they look to those gods. And they think to themselves, as long as I can worship these gods, and I can do the things that those gods require of me, I keep the dietary rules, and I do all the devotions, and I attend the temple or the mosque, whatever it is, and I do all that is required, my gods will give me peace and joy. They'll give me a good life here on earth. They'll give me a life of contentment. But then there are those, of course, who don't have those sort of idols, but they have the things of this world. And in our country, those are the greatest idols. There are people in our nation today, indeed there are people in most parts of the world, and they say, if only I had sufficient things of this world, if only I had sufficient material things, if only I had a big enough house, and a nice car, and nice clothes, and a nice lifestyle, a lifestyle which is full of activity. You know, I meet my friends in the evening and we go out and enjoy ourselves. As long as, if only I had all these things and holidays abroad and I can go frequently on holidays and enjoy my holiday. If only I had all these material things, my life would be a happy life, a joyful life, a life of peace, a life of contentment. All I need is material things and they will fulfill me. And so the material things become idols. Now, there is nothing wrong in seeking pleasure and joy and fulfillment and contentment. God isn't saying you mustn't be happy. God isn't saying you must have no joy in your life. To the contrary, God offers happiness and joy, peace and contentment. And God invites his people, indeed he invites all people, to come to him, that they may have happiness and joy and peace and contentment. Let me read to you some very, very familiar verses that God spoke through the prophet Isaiah. And this is what he said, "Come, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And he who has no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen diligently to me and eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food." So God isn't saying to the people of Israel in the days of Isaiah that you are running after these pleasures that the world gives you. You mustn't have pleasure. You must deny yourself pleasure. You must have a joyless life. You must have an unhappy life. You must have a miserable life. Come to me and you'll have misery. God isn't saying that. God is saying to the people of Israel, you are seeking joy and happiness, but you're seeking it in the wrong place. You're going after the things of this world, the material things of this world. Isaiah was written at a time when there was tremendous economic prosperity in the land of Israel. During the time of King Uzziah, the nation had known peace. There was no war. The surrounding nations had been subdued. And there was tremendous economic prosperity. People's lives had become so much better in terms of material things. And so this had distracted them and they'd gone after these material things. And they thought, if we have all the possessions of the world, we will be happy. And that's what they ran after. And God speaks to them. Because God is compassionate and gracious and merciful. And God says, you don't go after those things. They won't give you joy and happiness and peace that you seek. They will leave you thirsty. They will leave you frustrated. They will leave you depressed and unhappy. Isn't that a description of our country today? You speak to the people in this country who are not Christians. They may have tons of material things, but they don't have happiness. And they're still looking for it. They don't have joy and peace and contentment. They're still looking for it. And God speaks to his people. And he says, come to me, he says. Come, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. Come and buy. Come buy without money and eat. And he says, come buy wine and milk. And these are, of course, the kind of figures of what brings joy to people. Why do you spend, he says, your money for that which is not bread and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Why are you running after these things? Listen diligently to me and eat what is good and delight yourselves in rich food. Friends, I want to say this to you this morning. Those who truly love the Lord Jesus, those who truly know him and love him and worship him, truly have joy and peace and contentment. Now, I'm not saying there's no trouble in this world. Of course I'm not. I'm not saying that there are no difficulties and life is one long victorious march to heaven. Of course I'm not. But I am saying this, that deep in the heart of every child of God, there is joy and there's happiness. The joy of the Lord is our strength because we know the one true living God. We've come to love the one true living God. We've come to know His love and His salvation. How do we come to know Him and love Him? Well, in a little while, we're going to come round the table. And we come to know Him and love Him through Christ. It is through Christ that we come out of our sinful rebellion. It is through Christ that we come out of our slavery to sin. It is Christ on the cross who died for us. It is Christ on the cross who gives us forgiveness and redemption and cleanses us and reconciles us to the Father and adopts us into the Father's family as His beloved children. So we come out of darkness into God's light. We come out of slavery into reconciliation. We come out of sin into righteousness, and we become the children of God, and we walk with God, and we know the love of God, and the Spirit of God pours His love into our hearts, and we know joy, and we know happiness, and we know fulfillment. It is in Christ and only in Christ. So Moses says to the people of Israel, Moses says to us, there is one true living God. And we are to worship Him alone. We are to seek our joy and our happiness in Him alone. And worshiping Him is joyful and contentment. And then there's a second lesson from this chapter on creation. Sorry, I should have, thank you, Keith, I should have quoted Deuteronomy 6, because this is what God says to Israel, you see. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God. So you see, he emphasizes this, that there is one God, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your might. That was God's call to the people of Israel. And then there's a second thing that we learn, and it is this, that the one true living God is sovereign over the whole of creation, and we are to trust Him alone. The one true living God is sovereign over the whole of creation, and we are to trust Him alone. Because this is what had happened to the people of Israel. This is what had happened in Egypt. They had begun to think that there are these 2,000 gods. And so the river Nile is under the control of a god. And the harvest is under the control of another god. And marine life is under the control of another god. And animal life is under the control of another god. And light and darkness and so on. And so Moses goes into all this detail. He doesn't just write a broadside description of creation, that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth and everything in it in 6 days. Now let's move on. He goes into all the detail because he says to the people of Israel, whatever you see around you, you look at the sea, and you look at the land, you look at the animals, you look at the marine creatures, you look at the birds, you look at the sun, you look at the moon. Whatever you see, God created it and God is sovereign over it. So you don't go praying to your other gods because there is one God and He created everything and He is sovereign over everything and He controls everything. Do you know, it's a very, very interesting thing. This struck me this week as I was studying this passage. That the parallel passage to Genesis chapter 1 is actually the plagues of Egypt. I wonder if you've ever thought of it like that. Because in the plagues of Egypt, God was speaking to the Egyptians. And in Genesis chapter 1, God is speaking to the Israelites. But the message is the same. In the plagues, God was saying to the Egyptians, your gods do not control the frogs and the lice and the locusts and darkness and the river Nile. It is I who control all these things. That's why the Nile became a river of blood. That's why there was a plague of locusts. There was a plague of frogs, a plague of lice. Why there was darkness day after day. It was God speaking to the Egyptians and God saying to the Egyptians, your idols are worthless idols. You pray to the God of the Nile, but I've turned the Nile into a river of blood. And you pray that you might not get plagues of frogs. Well, I've given you a plague of frogs. You can pray to your gods as long as you want. But that plague of frogs remains because it's not your God who is in control of the frogs. I'm in control of the frogs. And you can pray about the locusts, but no locust will ever go because I bring the plague of locusts and I remove it. So God in the plagues was speaking to the Egyptians and revealing himself to be the sovereign God through the plagues. And here in Genesis 1, he's speaking to the Israelites. And he's saying to the Israelites, look at the whole of creation. And I'm in control of everything. Now, when you look at this passage, and I made this point last week, you notice that this passage goes from the great, great, great things of creation to the minutest details of creation. God speaks about the heavens and the earth and all the stars and the planets and how he created all of them. And then he comes down to the minutest details of life on earth and all the vegetation and the animals and the things that creep along the earth and marine life, all the fish and all the birds. So all this minute detail, why? Well, because God is sovereign over all the great things of life. And God is sovereign over the minutest details of life. God rules the universe. And God has set each star in its place. And God has set the planets that go around each star in its place. And God ensures that each planet revolves around each star. And God has put the sun and the moon, everything in the universe, God has put there. And God rules it. God is ruler over it. But then in a garden in Clevedon, there are some tadpoles. And this is not the right time for the tadpoles to turn into froglets. And so God makes it that those tadpoles for a few more weeks or a few more months remain tadpoles. They're not going to turn into froglets yet because the time is not right for them. He is the same God who rules the universe and who rules a little pond in a garden in Clevedon and life in that pond in that garden in Clevedon. Now you see why this is of such great comfort to us. The people of Israel were about to go for 40 years in the wilderness. And there is no water and there is no food. Will God provide for them? Well, Moses in this passage is saying God is sovereign in everything. And God is interested in the minutest of details. He's interested in the big things and he's interested in the minutest of details. I'm reading a book at the moment about British prime ministers and the chapter on John Major. It says that John Major had this mind for detail. He loved the detail. So when his advisors came to him and they discussed foreign policy or defense or education, he wanted all the details. He loved details and he wanted the minutest detail about every school, every hospital and so on. And then there's a chapter on Boris Johnson. And they say, well, when Boris Johnson's advisors were with him and they started talking about detail, they could see his eyes glaze over. He was the guy with a big vision, you see. He thought about big things and major things and so on. And the big plans. But details, apparently, I'm not criticizing anybody. I'm not making any political statements. It's just a statement of fact. The details apparently bored Mr. Johnson. He wasn't interested in the minute details. Well, we have a God in heaven who is interested in the universe. We have a God in heaven who rules each nation, the United States and China and Korea and the Islamic world. He rules over each nation and he appoints the rulers of each nation. And we have a God in heaven who is interested in the minutest details of the lives of every one of his children. Whatever issues we are facing today, whatever anxiety, whatever worry, whatever health issue, financial issue, whatever, God is interested. He is not like Major and Johnson, one or the other, but he's interested in everything and is involved in everything because he is the one true living God. So two lessons from Genesis 1, the one true living God is the one, he's the one, and we are to worship him alone. And the one true living God is sovereign over the whole of creation. And we are to trust him alone.